Live Wild's Connection Matters podcast, bringing together heart-centered, nature-connected, curious people who share the inquiry, how can we create a connected and meaningful way of living that brings more health, happiness and growth to our world? My name is Leona Johnson and I am your host. Hello and welcome back to episode 70 of Connection Matters podcast. I'm really grateful to be here today. Oh, yeah, it's dark already, you know. I know you'll be listening all over the world at all different times of day, but for me, I'm a little bit shocked by how quickly the angle of the sun has changed. I don't know, has anybody else noticed that? It feels like all of a sudden I can't sit out and have my breakfast in the sunshine because I live on a steep-sided valley and the sun is behind the hills for a lot longer. So there's only a little bit of time and I'm nearly at that time of year where the sun completely goes and it doesn't come back until Valentine's Day on my little front and backyard. So yeah, pretty affected by that. Here today to introduce an episode with Martha Hunt Handler, who I'll just read her bio and then I'll explain a little bit more. She grew up in northern Illinois, dreaming about wolves, and has always understood that her role in this lifetime is to tell stories and be a voice for nature. She has been an environmental consultant, a magazine columnist, an actress, and a polar explorer, among other occupations. She is the author of Winter of the Wolf. I have just read Winter of the Wolf. I've spent a few days immersed in the book and, oh my goodness, it's quite a journey. It's so powerful. It's got a plot that hits Martha really close to home and she's using this fiction book as an opportunity to have bigger conversations for families and teens who are dealing with grief and mental health and even death and animal conservation practices and protecting nature. So she certainly does that in the book. So the book is a story about a death of a young boy, too young to go, and how the family cope afterwards. And obviously there is just so much scope there for talking about connection and about how we relate to each other, how we relate to death and how we relate to life. And Martha's own spiritual beliefs really affect the journey that the protagonist goes on in terms of what she believes happens to a spirit, you know, the life force after a person dies. And it particularly touched me because I don't have one belief system and I do tend to lean towards things that sound healthy, sound like that makes sense, and yet, as with a lot of these things, I don't have any proof. I have lots of examples of when I have felt something or when I've experienced some form of message that I believe comes from nature or the universe or specific beings, and I also understand that to other people that could be dismissed and put down to many other things. And so it opens up all those questions and it's really interesting to hear what came out of my mouth. And I'm like slightly having a little bit of vulnerability about that now, because sometimes I talk about things as though they're very definite and actually I sometimes feel very definite about things and then I'm also open to them being completely wrong or different or adapted and amended depending on certain situations. So that may not mean anything to you right now, but the conversation goes quite deep. And I would say that the book is recommended for young adults and for everyone to look at all of what goes with death, sudden death, young death, death in a family, all of the things. And it really does confront many of the themes that come up. It's also very shocking, and I spent most of the time reading it in tears, not just because of how sad and shocking the event is, but because of all that I saw in all of the relationships in the book, and it's very moving and powerful for that reason, and is a fiction, a work of fiction, based on things that have happened in Martha's real life. And so, you know, you can see that the reason it touches one so well is because it comes from, you know, stories and experiences of reality, and or one version of reality. You know, it's powerful for that. So I'm really grateful to have had the opportunity to dive into that book, because I don't get to read fiction very often anymore, and it's especially good when that fiction really brings me close to exploring my own belief systems and what does certain things mean. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. I hope you can travel with it, and I would fully recommend the book if you are willing to go on a journey. So if you enjoy the podcast and you are appreciating all these stories that are coming to you via Connection Matters, then do hop over to the Patreon, patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast, and there you will get some freebies and behind the scenes info and some giveaways from some of our guests. So I'm really, really super grateful to all those who are supporting us already. You know who you are, and each week we get more patrons, so I'm so grateful and honoured and excited to know that we're going to be able to keep going because of you. So that really matters. Also, please, if you haven't already, would you tell one other person about this podcast, you know, or share a link to them, to the one that you like the most? Because actually, I think with podcasts, that's how they grow. For people who've been particularly touched, whenever they've recommended to me, you really need to listen to this. That's what makes a difference to me, is the person who recommends it. So if there's someone who you think would enjoy it, then yeah, just send it on to one or two people and let them know why it's touched you, or why you think that they would enjoy it, because I'd love to get these stories out to more people. I feel like my life is becoming more buoyant because of the work that I'm getting to do now, by exploring life and connection and growth and healing and grief and all of these themes, and I'm hearing other people say the same, so that feels exciting to me, and it's worth sharing. If you haven't already, then do subscribe and hit that little button below your player, and that means you'll get all of the episodes straight into your inbox. And apologies for the late arrival of this podcast. I've just had a really busy week, so we do try and get one out a week, and sometimes that slips behind, and sometimes I do two a week, and yeah, it usually works out. So yeah, thank you for sticking with us. So this is the author of Winter of the Wolf, Martha Hunt Handler. Hi, Martha.
Hello. So nice to be here.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on to Connection Matters podcast. Yeah, I'm really grateful that we're going to get the opportunity to speak about your work and speak about the book that you've got out, because I've just spent a few days immersed in the whole story, and I know that's what we're going to talk about today. But I'd love to start, if you're willing, by sharing some gratitude, because I feel like, and I know you've mentioned it in the book as well, that gratitude is a big, an important practice that you've sat with. And it's a practice for me that has really always helped me really connect with the moment and connect with feeling alive and being present. So, so we always start at the beginning of this podcast with gratitude. And today I'm particularly grateful for the synchronicities that occur in life whenever you're open to the possibility. So I've been hearing stories from different podcasts and from different things that I've been reading, and different opportunities that are bringing me into connection with my own grief. And that's not always the case, but obviously I've been really in the story of the book, which has, a big theme of grief and healing. And it's been a really great opportunity for me to be able to just let my tears flow and know that that's okay. So it's all of those things that have come together. This amazing podcast that I heard of a woman who is working very closely with a man who murdered her friend, in order to support his recovery, and just touched me so much. And then another book that fell off my shelf that was about the near-death experience of one woman who I read the book a few years ago, but just seeing it again just really touched me in relation to the things that I know in your book, and again brought me close to my own grief and my own feelings about a friend of mine who died just over 2 years ago, who I will share more about later in the podcast. But it's just, life is funny, isn't it? And I love that. I love that that sometimes you just get these opportunities to go through something, and if you're open to it, it feels like it's stuff moving. So I'm grateful that I am safe and well enough to be able to do that in a healthy way and in a loving environment. So that's quite a deep share for me, actually, even for me. But there's an indication of where I've got to through reading your book. So thank you.
So I'm grateful to be here with you. To know that there are people like you connecting in this way is so beautiful and profound for me. And I'm very grateful for this time, even though it's crazy that we're shut down and can't see one another, because the quietness is allowing for so much of my opening, because I understand synchronicity is happening all the time, but boy, if you don't quiet down enough, you kind of miss a lot of it. And so just, really sitting with the synchronicity. My daughter said something to somebody the other day when they were like, how are you coping with the COVID lockdown? And she goes, my mom loves this. And I sort of do. I mean, I feel bad. I have four kids in their 20s. I feel bad for them. But for me, it's kind of magical and beautiful. And I know that I'm privileged and lucky to be able to say that I'm not looking for my next meal or where I'm going to sleep tonight. But the sense of just being quiet enough to see the synchronicity, and the more you see it, the more it just starts piling on to you. It's like everything is so connected, and so immediately you get responses really quickly, and it's all there for you. And so grateful to the universe right now.
Thank you. And I've got to say, I'm probably with you on that. This time to just stop, and although things have started again, I have noticed that I'm different. I'm being very guarded about what I agree to and what we are still in lockdown here, but it's a different level. And still guarded about what I agree to doing, because I really benefited so much from the slowness of life that became available to me that I didn't really even know was possible. And precious time at the same time as all of the big feelings that not knowing and all of that, but precious time. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
So, so we're here talking mainly because of your book that is, something that I didn't really expect to be diving into at the moment, and yet whenever I read the synopsis and the reviews of it, I just could not say no. It was like, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I want to be covering on this show. It's all about connection. It's about life and it's about death. Would you be willing to share a little bit about it?
Yeah. So my book, Winter of the Wolf, was an 18-year journey, which I talk about in a blog on my website, that it's very interesting journey and one that sounds like an incredible amount of time to birth a book. But I think every step was important to my own growth. So what started me writing this book, and I had always been a technical writer. I was an environmental consultant for years, but it was not at all heart fulfilling. Even though I did feel like I was doing something for the environment, it just wasn't doing what it was supposed to do for my heart. And I was kind of always like looking for that story. Where is it? What should I write about? And I couldn't really come up with anything. And then the moment my best friend found her 12-year-old son hanging was the shakeup in my life, that I started journaling seriously just about his death. And she and I had been brought up very spiritual. Her mom taught spirituality classes. We spent a lot of the classes connecting to her sister who had passed on. And so we always understood that death was, you know, just nothing more than a passage from our soul going from one place to another. And, you know, there's no barriers to communication. But when her, when a boy dies at 12, it seemed like both of our worlds just got rocked. And I couldn't figure out how to talk to her about it. And because of the way his death looked, it certainly looked like a suicide. So she got blamed a lot. And that was hard to watch her go through, with people saying, well, why didn't you get him to a therapist? Why wasn't he on medications? And the truth was, he didn't show any signs of depression. It came out of nowhere. And she had a deep-seated belief that it wasn't suicide, but it was hard to understand where she was coming from with that. So I was just writing and writing. And then one day I was skating on a lake and found a deer embedded in the lake. And I don't know why, but it opened something in me, and her son started speaking to me. And his message was, this is your book. Go tell the story. Those journal entries are not journal entries. They're the beginning of a novel. Use my story. And so, yeah, I did. I just started writing about it. It doesn't really follow this boy's life in any way. Just the way the death happened is about the only similarity. But I started realizing that this story would allow me to open up about my own feelings, that, you know, that that grief is not a healthy way to deal with a death, that it really should be a time of gratitude that this soul was in your life or that the time that they did, you know, that it's just not worth thinking about the time that you're not going to get, because that was never guaranteed. You just have what you already had. And, you know, and I was helping his mother realize that she did have a lot in those 12 years that she could be joyous about. And so that was really nice, connecting with her on this way. And she knew I was writing this book, and she would help me through parts of it, how her family was dealing with it, how she was dealing with it. So she was kind of always by my side in a way. It's so much of everything that I believe in, and that nature is there to always to speak to us, and we can ask questions of it, and we can ask for signs. And yeah, keeping just that synchronicity of the world wants to give you answers. So you just need to be there, be present, and ask, and thank them when you get it.
So that, whilst I get what you're saying, I think there's probably a lot of people who really don't get what that means. Like, I'm wondering, at what point did you realize that you could ask questions to the universe? And what does that look like for real?
So for me, it was really early. So I think by the time I was 4 or 5, I grew up in Northern Illinois. It was very rural at the time. I was allowed to go explore on my own. My parents were busy. My siblings were 10 and 12 years older than I was. And I spent a lot of time in this forest behind my house, and I could hear literally the voices of the trees and all different animals. They were very worried. They felt like disturbance was happening, and I didn't really understand in the beginning what they were talking about, but they were just very skittery and afraid and wanting me to somehow intercede, and I couldn't think of what I was supposed to be doing at such a young age to make any difference. And it ends up they did have reason to worry because the area we were living in was being turned into a subdivision. So in no time at all, it was all being dug up and houses were being put in and very little open space was left. And I thought that probably everyone could hear the animals because why would I think that I was different? But I think I said it to a friend when I was like 7 or 8. You know, she was about to sit on a rabbit's warren. And I said, oh, don't sit there. There's baby rabbits there. And she looked at me like I was crazy and then, you know, lifted up some twigs and stuff and saw and was just like, why did you know that? And was very critical of me. And I realized, okay, this isn't something I can really just readily share. And then I started, you know, thinking maybe I'm crazy. Maybe this is all in my head. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And the more I started thinking that way, the quieter the voices became, which was very scary for me. And during this time, I started having a black wolf show up in my dreams. And he was always, he was definitely a male. And he had very distinctive ideas about, yeah, you're doing something over here, but you're not paying attention to this. And this is what's really important to you. Like this person is going to take you far in your life, or these friends might not be looking out for your best interest. I don't know. He was just kind of like weirdly always in my dreams, and I didn't have any idea why. And so I kind of grew up with a belief that I was supposed to do something for nature, that there must be a reason I was given that ability to hear that. So I graduated high school early. When I was 16, I moved to Steamboat, Colorado. I was going to emancipate from my parents so I could go to an out-of-state college. And when I was there, it started happening again to me. And it was an interesting time in Steamboat because they were about to sell the mountain. And they had been really progressive in not allowing any chains in terms of fast food or anything like that. And the new owner definitely had different ideas. So I think like Earth gets to a turning point, and it turned to me to say like, okay, you couldn't help them, but you're older now. But I was still really young. But it definitely solidified my, okay, when I'm going to school, I'm going to, you know, definitely do something in environmental work. So that's kind of what made me realize that this is something that I needed to do. And I think I always had that kind of practice in myself where I would try to ask questions usually in the morning and usually at night before I went to bed, sort of like help me understand what I'm supposed to be doing in this situation and just kind of, yeah, either light a candle, some incense, and then just think about it. And I'd always get like sort of visions of what might make sense for me. I think, definitely an auditory and a visual learner. But yeah, I kind of always grew up with this, but also the more I talked about it, the more I knew it was pretty rare and not a lot of people were going to be open to hearing about what they were thinking was kind of crazy.
Yeah, and it's like it's one of those things that sounds like it came so naturally to you, and yet when you look at other cultures and you hear about the way that more traditional peoples and communities live and their belief systems and things, actually it's quite a natural way of living and being.
Yes.
So was there where you married those two things together?
I think like every Native culture had such a sense of watching nature and learning from it constantly and feeling so connected with it. And yes, we've moved so far apart. So in my book, like one of the characters, I watched the 1922 silent movie Nanook of the North. And second grade, I don't know why I would have ever been intrigued by a silent black and white movie, but for some reason I saw Nanook and I knew that he was my uncle, I think. I knew he was in my family somehow. I knew the smile. I knew the way he was doing things. I recognized the rest of his family members. And that was very strange for me, but I had a Native American grandfather growing up, and I didn't, he wasn't a very nice man. I wasn't particularly connected to him, but it was enough for me that, like, if you could fully see my office right now, you would see my drum. I have feathers everywhere. grew up like Pocahontas. I had like long braids. I was always wearing headbands and fringe, and until recently when I did 23andMe and found out that he's not my grandfather.
Oh, wow.
I was so upset that I went to a psychic because I was like, I mean, how can this be? I mean, like, I feel like a Native American through and through. And she said, oh, well, it's not like in your blood, but you've had many lives as a Native American. Okay, I feel better about that.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting, actually, because a lot of people are doing their genealogy at the moment, aren't they? And we somehow think that that's the whole story, but actually that's the story of our bloodline, and there's right. a whole other story.
Yes.
And I think that's a whole other podcast, actually, but but yeah, the idea that it's our spirit, isn't it, our body and our spirit have had different paths and they've joined together at this point in our life is a belief system that I think I've gathered from the book that you would hold true to an extent, and yeah, it makes some sense to me. You know, we come from the earth, and our body is made of the earth, and yet there's this life force that comes from where that creates all of the magic that is involved in being human.
Yes.
It's pretty big.
I think we've gotten into so much trouble with the Bible verse that says that mankind has dominion over the plants and animals. And I think, you know, it was misinterpreted and it was supposed to be your stewards of the of the plants and animals. But it's caused a lot of problems, I think, because yes, there's those that believe like we do that we are, you know, here for Mother Earth, and those that feel like it all has to be tamed into existence, and, you know, yeah. It's a tough one.
It is. So tell us a little bit about the characters in the book. I'm really intrigued about Sam and his, so Sam is the character who dies in the book. He's the brother of the protagonist, but he's very unusual, isn't he?
He is, sort of like what we've been discussing. So he also watches Nanook of the North, but he's always been very in touch with nature and always believes in, you know, if anything happens and you take the soul of an animal, how you have to pay respects to it. And you need to, like, you know, he fishes and he always releases it. He, unlike where he grows up in Minnesota, where everybody is hunting and fishing like crazy and it's all about who's stronger than who and that kind of thing, he's very quiet and into himself and very trying to teach the ways of nature and a big storyteller, especially around Inuit wisdoms. And I'm gonna have to delve into him further, I think, because a few people have said to me, I would really like to see a prequel to find out how Sam became Sam.
Oh, wow.
And I think that probably might be good for me too, to take it more from the beginning of how that all evolved more. But I like that idea because I guess you don't really get a sense of why he was like this. And he definitely stuck out and, you know, he probably paid the price by being beaten up by friends for having such strange beliefs. But, yeah, I definitely want to look into that more.
Oh my God, I would love to read that because, do you know, Sam His story, the way he is, his sensitivity and his connection to nature, I mean, that speaks to me of my own little boy. You know, my son is just so at home in the outdoors. And when we go out together, he's just off, you know, and he's so alive and so curious about everything, and the way he sort of follows things. And so whenever he's even got the long blonde hair that Sam was described as having, and you know, and he's only eight, my son, but it was like all of the good things that were said about Sam, you know, his individuality, his strength, his commitment to being his own person, all of those things, they really stuck out to me as being things that I would want for anyone, for any child to have that capacity to not be so downtrodden by our society that you can't follow your beliefs and be a really connected, good human. And then, you know, as we learn in the story, his sister she loved him to bits, but always thought he was a misfit to everyone else. But then actually he was also super loved by so many. And so I loved his character. I'd love to know more about him and his beliefs and where they came from, actually, because
And it's brilliant for you that you're getting your son out in nature, because I've always found it so interesting. I know that Dr. Kubler-Ross did so many different studies with children that were dying, and they were so at peace with it. Like if they're young enough, they have and they're verbal enough, they have a very good remembrance of what it was like that they came from. And where they're going, and they're actually pretty excited to die as much as they hate the pain that they know it's going to cause their family. And I think, like, naturally, you know, you have it in you where you weren't that far from your maker when you come here and you're young. And if you have parents who will say to you, you know, show me what's out there. What do you want to do today? Should we just dig in the dirt? Do we want to climb a tree and get a different vantage point on things? Do we want to make a little fairy village? So my mother and I were always like, we love to make little fairy villages. And yeah, if you just have one person in your life that's like rooting for you, and she was always that person for me. Like, there was nothing that I could do that she would think was crazy. And she always gave me so much confidence in my own intuition. Like, when I would say, does God really exist? And she would say, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, well, we went to one church, but she was like, you know, every other church in the town is in one area. You could go to any different one and, you know, see if anyone feels better than ours, or if none of them feels like any connection to you. Or when I was like later on in life, when I like go to a high school party or something, and she'd be like, you know, where are you going tonight? And I said, you know, I don't know. There's a party. I'm just not sure I should go. And she'd be like, what does your gut say? And I appreciate that so much. And I'm still doing it to myself. Like, you know, like, we have this amazing gift that we're given. I don't know if you've ever read The Gift of Fear.
No.
It's an amazing book. I highly recommend it. I probably bought 50 copies for people, but, it's just getting you back into that. You know, when you get goosebumps, when your stomach all of a sudden aches, you have a very good sense that something is wrong or something is right. You know, this person feels so good to me. I feel like I've known them my whole life. Or boy, this doesn't feel right. And I don't like the energy that I'm in right now. Or, you know, even from the point of like, yeah, this feels like a very dangerous situation. I need to quickly get somewhere safe or something's going to happen to me. Like, those are like real things. Like, yeah. And it's so quick, and it just like your body has miraculously figured this all out, things that you might not even be in touch with. And it's put them all together, and it's telling you something really direct. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I mean, I'm developing a program at the moment about raising nature connected children, because for me, this is my work, you know. It's just one of the things that I'm very proud of, and in how I'm raising my children. And, you know, by no means getting it all right, but the realizations that I've had because I've connected so deeply into that curiosity that you're describing, that your mum guided you with, you know, what do you feel? Where, you know, what could that be? What do you, you know, and drawing out of you, that's true mentoring. You know, that is truly allowing someone's internal wisdom and the wisdom that comes through us as, you know, as we can be conduits into bringing that into life. And that's such a skill, and it can.
And on the flip side, you know, anything that anyone does negatively is probably that much more detrimental. Like, you know, you can say the simplest thing, and if it's, if you're saying it to a child and you're someone that they respect and look up to, one sentence can go a very wrong way. I know I just got done reading, I don't know if you've watched, read Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
No.
But she talks about, she became bulimic from the age of 10 because a teacher that she really liked grabbed her waist and said, "Oh, you're always going to have to watch your weight if you've already got a belly now." And that was, I mean, literally to become a bulimic at 10, but it's so true. Like, just, we need to be really careful what we say to the young people, because you can spend a lifetime building them up and one person can say one sentence and it goes badly the wrong way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love the idea of just, I think it was so cool. And I did, you know, I did it to my, you know, my kids a lot too. Just, I don't know. What do you think? Cause you know, those friends of yours, do you think anything good is going to come of this? Or is this?
And so you do that, I guess, because that's what was modeled to you. And then on top of that, did you realize that that's what one of the things that really drew out of you, your innate ability to listen and know your own mind and body? And
I think so. Like, I always say that my protagonist Bean, who's 15, and it's her 17-year-old brother who passes away, who just is her idol in so many ways. She feels very deeply soul connected to him, so it's incredibly difficult for her to imagine a life without him. But I always say, like, she's the idealized version of myself, because she believes so strongly that he didn't commit suicide. She would know if he committed suicide. She'd know if there was something going on in his life. And I feel like, boy, I wish I had had more of that, because as wonderful as my mom was, my dad was very negative. And I recently came across, because I'm cleaning out all boxes during COVID, and I found a book that I wrote when I was 7. And I illustrated it. It was called The Runaway Bunny. And I thought it was so cute. And I, like, waited up for my parents to get home from dinner to show them. And my dad looked at it and read it and said, "Well, the drawings aren't very good. The story doesn't make any sense. And writers don't make any money. So that, you know, you can put this one out of your head." And I seriously think I put it out of my head. Like, I remember having, you know, teachers and English teachers in college and high school tell me, "Oh, you're a really good writer." And I, you know, all I could hear was my dad's voice saying, "Well, you know, you're never going to make any money."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And it is something that can be so small that just really hits home. I mean, goodness me, it does make me fear some of the things that I've said and done as a parent. And I hope that I've also done enough good to help them heal those broken bits of me that I've exhibited in my lifetime, you know, and that I can give them the tools to grow from all of the things that go on for them, because nobody's perfect. But just knowing that, just understanding that, we can all really be very much more careful about our words and what we do and say, especially to children, but to everyone, actually.
To everyone, right?
Yeah. So I'm thinking about, you know, relationships. You've talked about your relationship to your mother and father, and the story, just for people at home, is the story of a young man who, a family of three brothers and a daughter, a sister who's younger than the three brothers, and their parents, they're the main people in the family, and the second oldest child he is found dead in his room, and the protagonist is the sister, and she can't believe, I know Martha's already said this a little bit, but can't believe that he would have committed suicide. And yet this family have to face the fact that, you know, that's what occurred, and deal with all of their different guilts. And what unfolds, what you hear about their family is that beforehand they were quite a healthy family. You know, the parents are there still together. They do lots of, have lots of different in and out of school activities. They're all doing pretty well. The parents have a community, and lots of friends, and, you know, and by all accounts, it looks like, you know, a really healthy family actually compared to some. And yet what unfolds is how little they all really know and understand each other, even given the amount of time, you know, they're always together for 3 or 4 meals a week. I think I remember reading, and so that, you know, that's quite a lot of contact for a family to have. And yet, yeah, the mother and the daughter and the son who dies, Sam, they're all connected in a certain way because of their connection. They have some spiritual beliefs, or at least they're seekers. They're looking for meaning and understanding about the world. And then the others, the dad and the two older brothers, who seem to be just plodding along through life and not really asking the deeper questions. And I think... I'm forgetting the name of the sister.
The best friend. Bean.
Bean. I was just like, and Bean thinks that they're just shallow, and they don't.
I mean, on the one hand, I love her and say, like, she's the idealized version of myself, because she doesn't believe it's a suicide, and she is with her best friend, Julie, going all out doing, you know, that's the mystery part of it, doing interviews and a bunch of shamanic rituals and other things to try to prove that it wasn't a suicide. And you can imagine that everybody thinks she's pretty crazy, given that he was found hanging. Not a lot of explanation for something like that, but she so believes it that she has no problem going out and, you know, sort of going out on a limb and knowing that other people are looking at her like, wow, you just need to accept that your brother died and get on with it. And so I love that about her, that she's just won't give up. But she's on, you know, on the flip side, she's pretty judgmental about anyone who doesn't think as spiritually as she does. And she's pretty much judged her brothers and father as being, you know, just, yeah, like lumps. They're just, there's no substance to them. They don't, you know.
Yeah, they're hockey like players and
nothing's different in their life. And so this whole exploration for her has her opening her eyes to those that are different from us. And there's certainly more ways to be spiritual than to be openly talking about it and doing it. There's a lot of quiet, spiritual people also, and that's probably, you know, a good lesson for all of us to learn. I know I had given an early draft to a friend, and it had changed a lot because I had the mother sort of rooting her on and being a part of her, trying to figure out how he died. And in the final version, the mom's not really much help. And my friend said, you know, everyone does mother-daughter things. That's not very interesting. What about if her father is the one that makes, you know, has some growing to do? Mm-hmm. And so that was an interesting role for me, especially because I've shared that I wasn't so close to my father and he was pretty negative. And so, maybe I'm also re-envisioning what my relationship to my father might have been if I might have been a little more open, because, you know, it was interesting when he, right nearly before he died, he was in a nurse, in a like a care facility, and they had to move him either to a long-term facility, or one of my brothers wanted to take him home with him because he had promised my dad he'd never put him in a nursing home. And the nurses were calling me to say, he's too big of a guy. he doesn't belong in someone's house. Like you can't have enough care trying to take care of him. It would be really uncomfortable for him. Like, you know, when he made your brother promise he wasn't going to nursing home, he had no idea the care he was going to need. And, you know, and I'm trying to talk my brother out of this. And, so I called up this psychic that's supposed to help you when people are right before they pass to figure out what, you know, you should do. And so I told her my dilemma and she said, well, your dad is actually very spiritual and he's trying to do a bunch of work that he didn't do while he was on the planet. He was supposed to, open up a lot more than he did and do a lot of stuff. And he's doing it now, but he's, you know, is he going to do it in the next hour or is it going to take him 6 years? I can't tell you. I just know that the work he's doing, it won't make a difference if he's in a nursing home or in a house. He's not even coherent enough to even understand where he is. So the next day he was being moved to my brother's house and he died right before the van came to take him. And I was so thankful. And then that night I had this dream of him, which I don't think I've ever dreamed of him before. And he was saying to me, so your mother's taking me home. And I think I had a lot more to say to you that I never got to say, but I'll be with you. And it was just like,
wow,
it was really, it was a good ending for us. And so I wanted to somehow, bring some closure for her with her dad to have things be, for her to realize, sometimes we judge our family members a little too harshly.
Yeah. And I think what was interesting, I mean, obviously I'm curious about the experiences that you've had that have informed your story of what goes on in a family when somebody dies in shocking circumstances, someone so young as well. And obviously you've shared about your friend and her son dying, but have you experienced other death that had given you that insight? Because it felt really real, you know, the real utter devastation that occurred to the parents who, you know, the mother who just couldn't get out of bed for weeks and months even, and the dad who just carried on as normal but trying to hold it all together, and you know, and all of those themes, it felt very real.
So my mother was sort of the Mother Teresa of my small town, and like we went to funerals all the time. Like she just would never miss anybody's funeral, and she probably didn't want to pay for a babysitter for me, so I always went with her. And I could always, if the soul was in the room, I could tell her where it was. And sometimes, you know, if it was, sometimes the soul would be laughing their head off at stories that were being told, or would be shaking their head like, that never happened, or it was like this. And so we would get back in the car and she would be like, so were they there? What were they doing? You know, so I always had this sense of like, that it's just another step. But in terms of the actual pain, I think I was always, my mother had three friends commit suicide. Oh. And I remember going to their houses after and how much worse it was because of all the blame that you get. We've been through a lot. I mean, my kids just during COVID, we've lost six of their friends. And the most recent one was 3 weeks ago, a couple who had a 3-week-old baby OD'd together on a bed. Really horrible. And so I've been a lot with the girl's best friend, who's a good friend of my kids. And she had just read my book. And so she was like, wow, it's really, really helping me. And I could use spending some more time with you right now, just because if you could just reinforce, because this is crazy and both sets of parents are fighting over this 3-week-old baby and it's just everything's being ripped apart, you know, and everyone's trying to keep the what they have left of their son or daughter, and they believe it's in this baby, and it's making everything so much worse than it would be if they could just all relax and figure out what's best for the child right now. And so I feel like I'm always in it, and now since the book came out I'm getting you know, as you can imagine, just lots and lots of emails and phone calls and messages about, you know, help me get to that place that you get to in your book, that, and make me believe that these people are still with us in some way. So I'm always like, another recent story was a friend of mine's son just overdosed. And when I called her to talk to her, she's like, I know that she's like me and that believes, you know, and so, and she says, yes, it's just the physical contact, not being able to hug him anymore and see him every day is really hard. And I know he's with me. And she's like, oh, you'll get a kick out of this. So I knew I just needed to read a spiritual book, or, you know, I needed some book right now that would be the best for me. So she said, I went to Barnes and Noble and I'm standing, I walk into the store and I hear this weird drum solo. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. That was his ringtone. Yeah. And it's like the oddest drumming. Like, there's no way they would play that at Barnes and Noble. That made no sense. So I said, okay, Sean, you're with me. Thank you. Need to know that. And then she walked into the spiritual section and she was just standing there, like just hoping that, you know, have a book fall off the shelf or something. I don't know which book I need. And she and a woman from that worked at the store came over and said, can I help you? And she's like, okay, that was weird too, because they only have two people working in the store and no one asks you if you need help anymore. And she said, yeah, I'm just looking for like a book on, I just need some sign that I'm getting the right book. And she's like, oh, there's a book called Signs right in front of you. And she picks it out and it's all about like signs, like just to ask for a sign when someone passes over. So if you had a deep connection to polar bears, ask for polar bears. A real polar bear is not going to show up probably, but you're going to get pictures of polar bears, or you're going to see it on TV, or something's going to happen and that person's going to be there constantly reminding you that they're there for you. I know I had it with my mom because, you know, we're off book could speak about this. And so she sends me feathers and we've gotten to the point that I can ask her yes, no questions. And depending on which direction this feather lands tells me what her advice to me is. So that's been really special, but it's a great book to just help you believe in it, because it's just a condensed, so many different stories and a lot of people that didn't believe any of this. And once they started asking and were open to it, it comes flooding in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So, yeah. Wow. I mean, it feels like, you know, you've got all of this experience of death, of living and death, and you know, as we all do. I mean, death goes on around us all the time, but it doesn't always touch us so close. And I couldn't help thinking, but I like that idea in theory. I love the idea that it's not that the person isn't gone. It's just their body. It's just they've transitioned, and, you know, and life has done what it needs to do, and the spirit's done what it needs to do, and it's gone on to grow. But in reality, if that happened, you know, I do wonder, you know, how, if at all, how quickly, how I would actually be able to deal with that. Does it not make you fear, you know, like fear? How do you feel about, you know, about your own children when having experienced death? Do you really think that you could actually experience that level of spiritual maturity? I would say, you know, to be able to understand that is that.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anyone on the planet that can honestly say that, right? Especially about their children. That would be a tough one. I did just this morning, actually. So the girl that died with a 3-week old child, I just got there. They did like a YouTube video of the moments of her life. And she was a dancer and a yoga teacher. And the way they did it with really upbeat music, I couldn't help but like be getting up and dancing. And I really felt like, wow, like, I know she was only 29, but wow, what a spirit. What, like, that, I don't know. I just thought, like, boy, it just, she lived a lot in her 29 years, I would say. And she taught me a lot just watching that video about grace and freedom and just letting go and having fun. You know, she's like dancing in the subway with people. She's like, where she was, she would just start dancing. And you just see everybody around her light up. And I was like, wow, I feel like I need to do a little more spontaneity, you know, in terms of just remembering also to have fun so that if anything happens to my parent, my kids can say like, well, my mom, you know, she always had a great time.
And so in your book, that's the belief system that Bean holds. She held that belief, then she lost it when she couldn't understand that her brother would have committed suicide because it didn't make any sense to her. And then the story is how she regains her belief and understanding that that perhaps he was here for the time he was here. Only, and that was always the way it was going to be. No matter how someone dies, they then move on, and that she knew and she was able to look for the signs that he was around all the time. And really focus on the things that he brought in his lifetime to her. And she then was able to really take them with her, to carry them through into her own life and probably, hopefully, the way she lived for the rest of her life, which we don't know because there isn't a sequel yet.
Yes, I like that. So I have a whole reading source in the back of the book. But from everything that I've read, and I'm sure you have too, before you come into your life, you have a very strong sense of what you want to accomplish because you didn't do it in a past life. And maybe there's this, this, and this that you need to do in this incarnation. And that you also, you plan who you're going to come into geography wise, the people, the souls that are going to be around you. And you also plan where you're going to exit. And that you also have 2 to 3 other exit points so that if you're realizing I'm never going to get where I need to go because these two people are my parents or because of where I'm living or the people I'm surrounded with, you have, ways to exit out of the life. And I think like the more you read that, you just, it gives, everybody seems to have the same kind of story. It's like those life after death stories, we saw the light, I saw everything was explained to me, and then I was told I hadn't done it. There was more I needed to accomplish. And as much as my family's all there and I love them, I really didn't want to go back because that's how beautiful it is on the other side. Mm-hmm. And you think it would be the most reassuring thing. But it's, it's still a heavy topic for sure.
Well, it is. And I think the thing is, for me, it's much easier to believe that it's, it's a death. I don't know if you've never used this word, so I don't know if it's the wrong word, but there's some sort of destiny about it. Something that's predetermined, maybe not fully. It's not like we don't have agency within our own lives, but actually there is a thing that there's something that we don't have any control over. So therefore there's nothing major that we can do to change and alter that path. And I think, I'm speaking of the death of my very dear friend Laura McNally, who died just over 2 years ago, and she found out that she had stage 4 cancer. Once she found out she had stage 4 cancer, it was stage 4 already, and yet she was so determined to live that she took me and a whole host of others on this incredible healing journey into which she delved into every possible healing modality that you could possibly uncover. And she looked at her own ancestry and healing the wounds of her, her past. And she looked at, all of the toxins and things in her house and how she could change and do that differently. She looked at, spiritual belief systems, and we went to Germany and we did, we did healing ceremonies, and she took herbs and she did Reiki, and, she did the full whack of things that could be done. And for a while, she completely eradicated the cancer from her body. It was a miracle. It felt like it was a miracle. The doctors couldn't find the cancer, and it was just to be part of something like that so deeply absolutely blew my mind, changed possibility, you know, changed for me that well, everything, actually, my belief system about drugs and the medical system and the way we live and how we communicate with ourselves and each other and everything. And it was beautiful. And then sadly, she got a very aggressive form of cancer and in a different place. And just months after that, she died. And she didn't want to die. I mean, she didn't face that part at all. And that was, I suspect, part of the healing that she didn't quite manage, you know, to be able to face the reality of, because of the fear of leaving her son, her 14-year-old son. And she's actually said, you know, she said, I can't look towards death because then I have to deal with the possibility that I might not be here to see my son grow. And so I'm only going to focus on living. And even the day before she died, you know, she flew back from Germany knowing that the clinic she was in wasn't quite the right place. And she was like, I'll just go to hospital for the night. I'll get back on track. And then I'll think about what else I'm going to do to heal tomorrow. And that was the day she died, you know. And it was such a profound and powerful journey. But everybody around us in our community had a different response to it, because obviously, you know, she didn't choose a conventional route, but she had already been given her life sentence, so she had nothing to lose. And at the same time, there's all these questions, you know, what if things had been different? And I think for me, the most important part was this energy that she lived with, you know, the power of what she exhibited and exuded, and what she's left in me. Actually, I don't think I'd be doing this or any of the things that I'm doing without having had her in my life. So I feel very blessed.
What a legacy that is.
I know.
Mean, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a pretty powerful legacy.
Yeah. And I look, but what your book has done for me is made me realize, actually, I'm not looking for the signs, and I haven't been talking to her, and I haven't been, as much as I often leave offerings and gratitude, I haven't actually sort of done that connection based listening. So I'm intrigued to see where that goes now. And okay, so
I would highly recommend that book. It's hard to, I mean, it's just so many different stories.
The Signs one.
Yeah.
I'll put that in the show notes, all of the books that you mention, just for our listeners, just to let them know. We'll be putting all of these in the show notes.
And I hope her son has, you know, if you could reach out to him and share that book with him when you feel like he's in a good place with that, because I would say she's watching him every every moment. So if he could be reassured that she really is, you know, that's pretty cool, because most mothers can only be there, you know, for this certain amount of hours, but his mom's got ability to watch him 24/7. And yeah, as we know, if you can just tune into that synchronicity of life, just it's a powerful force, and you always feel protected and that there's answers there. And wow. Mm.
And do you know that the other thing about your book that I thought was super inspiring was the way that Bean and Julie, they read some books and then they just went out and did their own ceremony. You know, they didn't need to go and pay somebody to hold this ceremony for them. They weren't worried about getting it wrong. They weren't worried about, they just fell into it. They read some books, and I know that you leave some, recommend some books that they used in the back of your book, which I'm also intrigued to look at. But it was for me it was about that act of having some sense of what you want to achieve and then some key ingredients about how you're going to do that, and then just going and doing it and practicing, you know, and open to the possibility that it may or may not work.
Yes. And like being like I had a girlfriend and we used to do spells on people all day long. You know, we just would collect things and put them together, and pray over them or meditated about it. And like, yeah, until someone realizes what you're doing and tells you, that's crazy. You can't do that. I think there's a natural witchiness in all of us, especially women, to, somehow match something earthly with a desire and to conjugate something out of it. I think it's like a very natural source that we have until someone tells you differently. But I love their shaman experience. It was really fun just to go back and remember that was the kind of stuff I used to do all the time and that I'm now like focusing on doing again now that I have this quiet time.
And I guess, I mean, the one thing I would say about that is, and there probably are some teachers who would say, no, you can do it wrong. And for me, it's really about intention and gratitude. And you can, and that is real. So we can do it playfully. We can do it with an open heart. But if we're doing it with malintent or without consciousness, really being open to listening, then possibly, I guess there's something around that, some care to be taken, but it shouldn't feel out of our reach is the inspiring thing, isn't it? It's like it shouldn't be
And I always like that when you like I'm doing some animal communication work because I'm trying to get back into it now that I had it so naturally and now I actually have to work to get it back, but I really want to and it's a good time for that. So just all those things that you didn't have time for before, it might be a good time to reopen to that. But yeah, there's always that caution of like, be clear in your intention, state it out loud. You don't need any dark energy forces coming in for no reason. You want to really keep it light and looking for gratitude and whatever wisdom is out there that might want to come forth for you.
Yeah. And I guess, the reason I'm saying that is because there are so many different belief systems that, that we could be speaking about where you set an intention, you do something that looks like a ceremony, you bring some certain types of, herbs, or you burn something, or you light a candle, or you bring in the elements and you're connected to gratitude. And they're all different and they all have different recipes for that. But ultimately it's about, to me, it feels like it's a little bit, it's very connected to, personal sovereignty and personal power and choosing the path of your life and being open to, the web of connection and the web of all life. So,
and I love being with teachers who immediately are telling you everyone can do this. Like there's nothing. The only reason that I'm your teacher right now is because I'm more open to it than you. And as soon as you get to this open place, you'll be able to do it just as well as I can. And, I like that with channelers and psychics and animal communicators, just, because, I don't like when people come at me like I'm the special one that can do this, but don't even think that you have any ability to do this. That's why I need to do it for you.
Yeah. The animal communication thing I'm interested in because that's the book is one big part of your world. And it seems to be like a way that you've managed to bring a lot of your wisdom gathered through life and your belief system and some very powerful messages to the people. And then the other part of your work is the work with the Wolf Sanctuary, which we haven't spoke about yet. And yes. I'd love to hear about that before we finish.
And I'd love to talk about it. So that works out well. So I mentioned before that wolves had been in my life. And if you had asked me what my totem animal would be, it would always be a wolf, even though I had never seen one, never had any kind of relationship with one. When we moved to New York 24 years ago from Los Angeles, we rented a house that had woods in the backyard. And almost as soon as I got there, I started hearing wolves, which I thought, okay, this is really weird. Wolves haven't been in New York in like 120 years. And I'm meeting new mothers at the bus stop and saying, do you hear wolves? They're like, just coyotes. And I'm like, oh no, what I'm hearing is not a coyote. But one day I walked into the woods and I found three wolves in an enclosure, and there was a trailer next to it. And I knocked at the trailer, and this beautiful French girl walked out. I think she was about 26 at the time. And she told me that she had become psychically connected to a wolf at one point in her life and had decided, and the wolf had told her that wolves in America were facing huge problems. And she knew, she's a concert pianist, she knew that given her life's work, she plays about 230 concert dates a year all over the world, she was never going to be able to have her traditional family or pet or anything, but she thought she could open up this wolf center so that she could teach people about why wolves are so important, and their work that they do as the top predator in ecosystems. And she also wanted to advocate on their behalf for laws that were being passed and to be a breeding and pre-release facility for the two most critically endangered wolves in North America, which are the red wolves and the Mexican gray wolves. So we talked that afternoon. I started just kind of regularly going back there and speaking more with her, and she asked me to help her, and I did, and I've been involved for 20 plus years, ever since we opened. And it's been incredibly gratifying. So my recent experience with this was, I had like a bad stomach problems for like 4 years, and I'd been to like every New York doctor, you know, from acupuncturist to internist, and had so many tests, but no one could figure out why my stomach was just always in so much pain. And I went to this clinic in Austria early spring. And it's a clinic that has you see a shaman and then also has all these special medical, and they're doing testing that supposedly isn't done in America. So my first stop was the shaman, and he put me into a trance, and then he nudged me awake and said, do you have something to do with wolves? And I said, yes. And he said, because there's like hundreds of them in my office right now. He's like, I've never seen anything like this. Okay, I'm going to put you back under. So when I came back out of the trance, he said, so the wolves have a message for you that will solve your stomach issues. You need to stay in your wolf lane. Like, there's a lot of bad environmental stuff going on, but you can't be distracted by that because you're here to help the wolves. And the more that you get distracted, the less powerful you can be for wolves. Seriously, it's solved all my stomach issues. Wow. And if I ever feel myself going there again and like feeling pain, it's because, you know, someone has brought up, you know, some other animal or some other, and I start going, reading a bunch of articles, and then it's like the stomach starts going, no, that's for somebody else. You're here for wolves. Just please stay in your wolf lane. So,
oh my goodness, I wish someone would tell me what lane I need to be in.
So true.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my goodness. And so the wolf sanctuary, so all the proceeds of the book that you're selling, is that right?
Yes. Are going to the Wolf Center.
Are going to the Wolf Center. Wow, that's really generous, and even more reason for people to go out and get the book.
Yes, it's very interesting at the Wolf Center because we now are up to 11 employees. We have 50 wolves because both of the release programs are in the courts and not releasing wolves. Otherwise, we don't normally keep this many wolves. Pretty much all of our employees and our volunteers are there because they have like a similar story to mine. A lot of them is because when they were in second grade, one of our wolves came to their classroom and they heard about it and decided, like, literally in second grade, as soon as I, you know, get out of college, I'm going to go work for the Wolf Center. So wow. Everybody's got these just wonderful wolf connections, like deep in our souls. We feel like this is the animal we're most supposed to protect. And I think, you know, Europe is starting to deal with it a lot. So when I went to that clinic in Austria, I had a shirt on that said something about, you know, all my t-shirts have wolves on them, but yeah. Someone was like, you know, we don't want the wolves coming back to Austria, you know, and I had no idea that it was an issue there. And yeah, that they are starting to trickle down into places.
I was working on a retreat with Way of Nature UK in the very north of Scotland. There's a nature reserve called Allerdale, and the owner of that vast expanse of land was thinking about trying to reintroduce wolves. That was a 2 or 3 years ago when I was there. So I'm intrigued as to how far he's got with that, because I know there was local resistance to that. Obviously,
in Europe, you don't have a whole lot of prey species left.
No.
So they would, you know, most likely be going after the sheep and the cows.
And the deer there were so tame, actually, because they had to be fed in the winter because of the long snow season.
That's been my COVID issue, is that my wolves all get fed from the deer that are hit by cars on the roads. That's how many deer are up here. And it's just it feeds 50 wolves, no problem at all. But when COVID hit and there wasn't any cars driving.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah.
So I'm like putting out bulletins, please, if you see a dead deer, let me know and we'll come get it. And no matter what, all of a sudden I'm getting texts from everybody. There's one here.
Yeah, well, that's one unintended consequence that's sort of a good bad thing. I guess I just want to say, thank you for what you are doing in the world and for listening to the messages that have come to you, for listening to the voice of your friend's son who told you to write this book, for really turning towards what is a very numerous, very difficult and misunderstood subjects, you know, everything from communicating with other than human beings, be those land or animals, dealing with grief and suicide and death and all of the things that come with that, and also the wolves, the misunderstood amazing species that we need to protect. And I feel like all of those things are you know, they're pretty epic on their own, and together that makes for a very powerful life that you've lived, and a gift to the world.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be here and to speak with you. I think what you're doing is great, and I love that it was kind of birthed out of, you know, a lot of the situation with your friend and the situation that we all find ourselves in right now. I mean, that's kind of what it's all about, right? Being awoke enough that our path starts becoming clear to us. And I think you're doing a great job. I love listening to your podcasts. They're wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope it inspires you to follow your path of deep connection. I love sharing this information, and I'll always share any relevant links in my show notes. If you like the show, please consider supporting it at patreon.com/connectionmatterspodcast. This is where you'll find bonus episodes, giveaways, and behind the scenes content from me, as well as having my huge heartfelt thanks for any support you can give me. It really helps with the viability of the show. You can get most of what will be on offer for as little as £3 a month. Please also don't forget to subscribe on whatever app you use by clicking that little subscribe button below. That way you'll get all the upcoming episodes straight into your device. And review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. It's so helpful. The music that opens and closes the show is actually my very own dad, and you can hear more of his music at soundcloud.com/visionray.